A will allows you to determine exactly where your assets will go after you die, usually. That wasn't the case with one British willmaker who left money to the Royal Society for the Prevention of Birds. No doubt that was supposed to read the Protection of Birds, but the point is a will can eliminate legal pitfalls and provide peace of mind for your heirs. Today, host Rob West chats about that with money expert Ron Blue. Then we take some calls from all across the country. However, today's edition of the program is not live. We are pre-recorded. I'm Steve Moore. The importance of having a will, next, right here on MoneyWise Live. Rob, our guest Ron Blue is the co-founder of Kingdom Advisors, a frequent speaker on all things financial, and most important for today's topic, he's the author of Splitting Heirs, Giving Your Money and Things to Your Children Without Ruining Their Lives.
Well, that's right, Steve, and nobody better to talk about the importance of estate planning and making your final wishes known, as well as the legacy side of wealth transfer. Ron, great to have you back with us again on MoneyWise.
Well, as always, it's a privilege and a pleasure, so thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Ron, as we dive in today, I know you once counseled a young widow whose predicament really underscored the need to prepare wisely for the future. I'd love for you to start today by telling us that story.
Well, you know, I'll never forget it. I was giving a speech, and afterwards a lady came up to me, and she said, "Let me tell you my story." And her story was that her husband was an entrepreneur, and he had sold his business. She had no idea what the business was worth. She had never been involved with it. And when she found out that that the business had been sold for $7 million and put in a trust in a bank, she was stunned. But she was more stunned when she found out that her husband, for tax planning reasons, had allowed her to draw income out of the will, but her two daughters were the ones who controlled the assets. So she couldn't spend money without getting permission from her daughters. And you can imagine the devastation that she felt. And the real issue was that it put her and her daughters at odds. And it may have been good tax planning, but boy, it was terrible, terrible family planning. But that's not uncommon. And the amounts of money might be uncommon, but the fact that the husband prepares for the estate and doesn't really counsel the wife and she's not a part of the process, that's not an unusual situation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, we'll get into a few more of those family dynamics in a bit. But first, let's just talk about the benefits of having a will. Most people know they should have one, but a recent study showed that nearly half of Americans over age 55 haven't drawn one up at all. So just review with us quickly a few of the benefits, the reasons why everyone should have a will.
Well, I guess the first one is it's a legal document that has to be followed. And it's far, far more than a tax plan. It's really a final message to your heirs. And it's called the orderly disposition of your estate. So it covers such things for guardianship, for children, for example. I mean, any young family a family with young children should have a will,
yes,
providing for guardianship. And that's a really difficult decision in many, many cases. And also, it changes over time. But that's a good reason for a will and a will to be reviewed over time.
Yes.
It also can be something really, really important, and that is the passing of personal property that maybe has no monetary value, mm-hmm, but it has great sentimental value. You know, I'll never forget when my mother-in-law died. She had two sisters who fought over the china, and you know, viciously fought over the china.
Yeah.
And that's not uncommon either. There's favorite jewelry, favorite art, favorite things of personal property that can be covered in a will. And certainly, if you're a business owner, the orderly succession of your business can be aided with a will, and absolutely any business owner should have a will.
Yeah, those are great points. And of course, desired charitable giving would be another big one. Well, a lot more on this topic right around the corner.
Author and teacher and good friend Ron Blue with us today on MoneyWise Live, and we will be back with lots more right after this.
You probably have a strategy for your finances, your career, even your retirement. But do you have a strategy for your giving? At the National Christian Foundation, we can help you create a giving strategy to inspire your family, maximize your resources, and leave a lasting legacy of faith. To learn how, visit moneywise.org/NCF.
When it comes to investing guidance, you want advice grounded in God's Word. That's the approach offered by Sound Mind Investing. SMI has helped tens of thousands of Christians acquire investing wisdom and confidence. Regardless of your investing experience or how much you have to invest, you can learn to be a wise and faithful steward in the area of investing. A short video webinar on profit and peace of mind is available now at soundmindinvesting.org.
And now, a discipleship moment. Here's Phil Downer.
Sam had a Peter problem, a big heart like the Apostle Peter, but also a big mouth. Sam seems so bold at times, and too bold. Does that remind you of the Apostle Peter? Does it remind you of you? Well, to be honest, it reminds me of me. Sometimes I just need a focus adjustment like Peter got in John 21:15, where Jesus said this, "Do you love me more than these? Say, friend, try a focused adjustment today, like I so often need. Number one, look at everything that's important to you. And then number two, ask yourself this question, do I love them more than God? Then if God wants to give you a focus adjustment, and if you listen, he will put his finger right on the area that needs change. Try it today and solve a Peter problem."
To learn more about Discipleship Network of America resources, go to Downer.org.
The financial wealth you leave behind could be the best thing that ever happened to your loved ones, or the worst. In Splitting Heirs, giving your money and things to your children without ruining their lives, Ron Blue explains why it's important to make these decisions now, instead of forcing your heirs to do it later. Splitting Heirs will foster a real appreciation for the precious resources that God has entrusted to you. And it's available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Well, today in the first segment of our program, Ron Blue is here to discuss with us the importance of having the will, and it really is important, actually vital, wouldn't you say, Ron?
Oh, absolutely. And as we said before the break, a recent study showed that nearly half of Americans over age 55 haven't drawn one up, which means they haven't made a plan for the guardianship or the care of their young children, the passing of their personal property, making sure their desires are honored. What about a business and making sure that that's transferred orderly and effectively? And Ron, just before the break, we talked about the idea of charitable giving being a part of your will as well. You can only give money to three places: the government, heirs, or charity or ministry. And a will is one of the key ways to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And it's amazing how few people consider charity and charitable giving in their wills.
Yeah,
I don't have the statistic, but it's almost nothing that is given by will, and primarily because I found that nobody asked them. And by that, I mean the legal profession that prepares the wills. Rarely do they say, "Would you like to leave any money to charity?"
Yes.
And it's just assumed that you don't. Then that's tragic, especially for the ministry world, that there's a lot of money passed that should go to charity and ends up in the hands of heirs that don't use it wisely.
Yeah. I want to take just an opportunity, perhaps a bit of a tangent, and then we'll get right back to wills. As we talk about this whole idea of charitable giving, I know a term or a principle that you've coined throughout your ministry is the idea that you should do your giving while you're living so you know and where it's going. And I love that because it really puts the emphasis on not only should we be thinking about giving out of our will, but what about giving right now? Talk about the consideration that should be given between those two things, now and at death.
Well, when I say do your giving while you're living, that includes your heirs. Your heirs can probably use the money more now than when after you're dead. Yeah. And two, it's a really good test, either with charity or with your heirs, as to how they handle money that is given.
Yes.
Plus, I've always felt like God's law of compounding is much greater than man's laws of compounding. So if I can put his assets that he's entrusted to me to work for the kingdom now, think about the impact that that has throughout all of eternity. I say this facetiously, and I don't know that it's true, but I say I'm not so sure that we get any credit for charitable giving and from kingdom purposes at death because we don't have any choice. We're leaving it all anyway. And God wants me to be due to give and to experience the joy of giving right now, I believe. And that's just a personal conviction.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that thought for sure. All right, Ron, let's get back to kind of the mechanics of this. In your view, who should have a will?
Well, if you're breathing, that's the first criteria. That means you're still alive.
Yeah.
There's really almost nobody that shouldn't have a will unless perhaps, it's somebody that I can think of perhaps people in ministry who have nothing and who die with nothing.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't need a will. But if you're newly married, for sure you should have a will. If you have children, for sure you should have a will. We've already talked about the charitable aspect. It won't happen unless you have a will. Certainly, if you have significant assets, you should have a will. And incidentally, what tends to happen, I think, is that people, the most critical time to have a will is earlier than later. Mm-hmm. Later, it becomes the transfer of wealth that becomes really important. Early, it's more the care of the family that you cover in a will.
Yes.
Certainly, if you own a business, you should have a will. And people that have handicapped children or relatives that they're responsible for, that has to be taken care of ahead of time. If you've got separate property, in other words, in second marriages, which is happens a lot, each of the individuals bring into the marriage separate assets.
Yes.
My dad was remarried, and he married a woman, and Judy's mother was remarried, and both of them had wills because of the separate assets.
Mm.
So it's just a plan for the orderly disposition of the things that God has entrusted to you, and God would have this plan.
Yes, that's right. It's part of really a key role that we have as a steward of everything God's entrusted to us. And yet, so many, as we've already said, Ron, put it off or just don't do it at all. In your experience, why do you think that is?
Well, I think people are confused. They don't want to answer those questions.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily know the questions to ask. And it's not important because I'm feeling good right now. And so it'll take care of itself in time. And many times, I think most people think that a will is for the people as they get older as opposed to younger. But in fact, that's not the case. So I think it's not knowing what to expect and what questions to ask, let alone answer. And you have to make some hard decisions, and that's not always easy at any level.
Yes.
In a marriage. So I think this is where a facilitator or an advisor can come, really comes in handy in helping somebody think through the implications of a will, having and not having, because it's something you may not do yourself. So,
what about communicating, though, your intentions to your family, the heirs? Should you do that ahead of time? And what are some principles around how that should be done, perhaps drawing from your experience where it's been done well and perhaps not so well?
Well, I believe in that the heirs should never be surprised by the reading of the will. You don't have to talk about amounts, but as your children get older, and especially as they reach adulthood, they should know what's in that will, and they should know what your values are, and they should know why you decided what you decided. And the reality, again, is that the decisions that you make as you get older change. You know, yes. Jean and I have been married 55 years, and I'm 78, and I can't tell you how many iterations of wills that we've gone through because the circumstances change.
Yes.
So it's a document that is alive and needs to be reviewed and rewritten multiple times as you get older and as your circumstances change.
Well, and that's such a key point, too. It's not one of those things where you just set it and forget it. You do need to update it as your life changes, as the laws change, perhaps as you move from one state to another. And so it is something you need to revisit regularly and, as you said, Ron, have open dialogue with your family as to preserve the relational side and, perhaps more important, to pass down those values, the decisions that you made and the why behind each of them. Ron, always a treat to have you with us, my friend. God bless you, sir.
Thank you. What a treat. What a pleasure. Thank you, guys. Talk to you later.
Ron Blue has been our guest today. You'll find his book, Splitting Heirs, at our website, moneywiselive.org. Hey, you're listening to MoneyWise Live with Rob West. Today's broadcast is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking any calls, but we have some calls lined up and some great information coming your way that I think you'll find usable at the very, very least. This is MoneyWise Live. I'm Steve Moore. We'll be right back.
Siri, I need some advice.
What's up?
I have questions about planning for retirement, long-term care insurance. I don't know where to start.
It sounds like you need the MoneyWise app. It's a free app that will help you find those answers and more.
Really?
Sure thing. You can ask your questions within the app and access helpful articles and MoneyWise podcasts.
Sounds great. Siri, download the MoneyWise app.
Okay, searching for MoneyWise on the App Store. Learn more at app.moneywise.org.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
Deuteronomy 25, I want to start reading at verse 17. This is Moses talking. "Remember what the Amalekites did to you along the way when you came out of Egypt, when you were weary and worn out. They met you on your journey and cut off all who were lagging behind." Some of your versions say they cut off the stragglers. They had no fear of God. Please notice that. If you mark in your Bible, that's a great place to underline it, where it says, "They had no fear of God. When the Lord your God gives you rest from all the enemies around you in the land he is giving you to possess as an inheritance, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget." So what is God saying over the Amalekites? He is saying, obviously, when you messed with my people, you showed you had no respect for me. Do you remember when Christ said to Saul, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me?" And Saul would have gone, I'm not doing anything to you. I'm doing it to these men, women, and children of the way. But what Christ was saying to him, in effect, was this: what you do to mine, you do to me. I take it personally. And we see it here because he said, obviously, for you to mess with mine, you had no fear of me. You had no fear of me. And so he came against them as the Lord, their banner.
You've been listening to A Quick Word with Beth Moore. We have two ways to experience Now That Faith Has Come, a study of Galatians. The online experience is now available at bethmoore.org. The workbook edition will release in January 2021. Either way, Beth would love to have you in Bible study.
Siri,
I need some help.
What's up?
Well, sometimes I feel like I can't get a handle on my money. I mean, where does it all go?
It sounds like you need the MoneyWise app. It's a free app that will help you plan your budget and track your spending.
Oh.
Like the $3 you spend every morning on coffee.
Well, not every morning.
You'll also get access to free biblical financial advice.
Sounds awesome. Let's do it.
Okay, searching for MoneyWise on the App Store. Learn more at app.moneywise.org.
Hey, a real pleasure to have you with us today. This is MoneyWise Live. I'm Steve Moore, that other guy over there, the guy with the answers. He's Rob West, and we're happy to have you with us on the program today. However, we are pre-recorded. We won't be taking your calls, but we've lined up some calls in advance that I think you'll find interesting, helpful, and very, very practical. At least we've tried to make them that way. But I think the upcoming information will help you and bless you and make you a wise steward of what God's given you. Proverbs 8, verse 7 reminds us, choose my instruction instead of silver, knowledge rather than choice gold. And it's God's knowledge and wisdom that we seek when it comes to managing our money today. And if we can help you with that, we'll certainly try. Chicago, Illinois. Jackie Anna, thank you for calling and for holding. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm calling because I have a term life insurance, and I also have whole life insurance, and I was just trying to see, is it necessary to have both? Is that a good thing? Or sometimes I feel like, well, I'm paying for term, I'm paying for whole life, and it's like two insurances, and that's just taking up more money that I could be investing or saving. But I just want to know, is that an okay thing, or is that just like, oh, that's just doing too much?
Yeah. Well, let's separate the purposes here, Jackie Anna, for the various policies that you have. The primary purpose for any kind of insurance, whether it's whole life or term, is to have a death benefit to make sure that you're able to provide for your family in the event one of the parties, one of the family members dies, that you're dependent upon his or her income, or in the event of the death would add additional expense. So let's say there's a stay-at-home spouse that passes away, there's small children at home, they now need full-time daycare, that's not built into the budget, that's where insurance can come in. Or the primary breadwinner passes away, now there's no income, and the insurance, the death benefit is there to provide that income and make that up. That's really how we should view insurance. So the first question is, how much insurance do you need and on who? And the way you answer that is you say, whose income are we depending on? And usually, just as a rule of thumb, and that's all it is, you'd probably want to do some additional planning, you would say we need at least 10 to 12 times the income we're trying to replace in the form of a death benefit. So it's a $50,000 that somebody makes, you'd want at least $500,000 in death benefit. And then we'd look at other needs that exist, like I described in the case of somebody that would require daycare. So that's the first question. Then the second reason you would have a whole life policy is for a savings vehicle. Now, that's not my preference in terms of how you would save for the long term. I'd rather you buy as much insurance as you need, buy it as inexpensively as you can. That's going to be a term life insurance, and then save apart from that. Now, that requires that you do that. So you've got to make sure you keep your spending in check and you take advantage of your company sponsored retirement plan and building up your emergency fund and doing all of those things, perhaps a Roth IRA. And then as your savings grows, you will get to the point where you no longer have a need for the insurance as you're nearing retirement because you're now self-insured. You've got the assets that you can depend upon, and so the need for insurance goes away. So I think as you look at it, that would be the lens with which I would evaluate that. So tell me, what death benefit do you have on these two policies? Do you know?
Yes. So for the term, I have like $450,000, and for the whole, I only have $200,000.
Okay. And is this on your life?
This is for me. Well, the whole is just for me, and the term is me and my husband.
Okay. But so there's a difference between who is the insured and then who is the beneficiary?
We're both each other's beneficiary.
Okay. So the $450 is on your husband and the $200 is on you?
Yes. So the whole is just me. My husband didn't want to do it. He said that the term was okay. So me and him have the term for the $450,000, but he didn't want to invest in the whole. He thought that was just too much.
Yeah. Well, so I think the first question is, how much insurance do you really need? And that would start with, and we don't need to get into that now, that would start with you looking at what is the amount of income you'd need to replace if something happened to him, and what is the amount of income you'd need to replace if something happens to you, and can you generate that kind of income based on the proceeds of the life insurance? So on the $450,000 policy, you know, we'd probably generate about $22,000 a year without impact the principal, and if we were to pull a little bit more out, we could go up from there. If that's going to cover it, great. But you may find you need $600,000 or $700,000 on him to replace his income. Well, that's going to come in the form of additional term insurance, because it gets costly if you use the whole life for that. And then the second thing is, are you using it as a savings vehicle, and is that the best place, or would you be better off in a Roth IRA? So here's what I'd like you to do. Go to moneywiselive.org, connect with one of our certified Kingdom advisors who can help you evaluate how much insurance do you really need, and then secondly, what is the best savings vehicle for your long-term savings.
Jackie Anna, hope that helps you. Thanks very much. Rob, what do you say we take a look at an email? We keep meaning to, and it keeps sliding by. This one's from Michael. He says, Dear Rob and Steve, how should I prioritize my resources among these objectives? We have no debt but our mortgage and 3 months of savings. We have a good amount of excess every month. Should we pay extra on our mortgage, save for retirement, or fund college accounts for our children?
Yeah. So here's the way I would approach that, Michael. It's a great question. And remember, it is all about priorities. There are no sequential financial decisions. They're all simultaneous. And what I mean by that is every decision or spending decision has a corresponding impact on some other area of our financial life. So you've got your emergency savings in place. That's great. And you don't have any consumer debt in the form of credit cards. So the next is, make sure you're saving 10 to 15% of your income for retirement. Once you've done that, now we're looking at college and extra payments to the mortgage. But I would prioritize the retirement savings first once the credit cards are paid off and the emergency fund is in place.
If you'd like to send a brief email question to Rob, the address is questions@moneywise.org. Hey, if you hear a phone number mentioned today, please ignore that phone number. Today's broadcast is a reprise edition of the program, but I think the upcoming information will help you and bless you and make you a wise steward of what God's given you. This is MoneyWise Live.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
Hi, my name is Jessica. I'm a communications major at the Moody Bible Institute. For this week of Thanksgiving, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week is found in 2 Chronicles 5:13. The trumpeters and musicians joined in unison to give praise and thanks to the Lord. Accompanied by trumpets, cymbals, and other instruments, the singers raised their voices in praise to the Lord and sang, "He is good. His love endures forever." That's 2 Chronicles 5:13, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week.
Things are always happening at Moody Radio. God is at work in listeners all around the world. Our monthly online newsletter, Uplift, has changed in order to bring you more listener stories, more program updates, and more listening resources. Be among the first to know about Moody Radio's ongoing outreach. Check out the all-new, free e-newsletter, Uplift. Subscribe right now. Go to mymoodyradio.org, mymoodyradio.org.
Would you like your life to be infused with joy? Would you like to interject an eternal dimension into even the most ordinary day? Author Randy Alcorn says you can when you discover The Treasure Principle. In a concise, power-packed style, this newly revised and updated book offers a six-step plan to finding the immediate pleasure and eternal rewards of The Treasure Principle. And once you discover it, life will never look the same. The Treasure Principle is available when you click the store button at MoneyWiseLive.org.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. President Trump has pardoned former National Security Advisor General Michael Flynn today. The pardon, the final step in a case the Justice Department abruptly moved to dismiss, insisting that General Flynn should have never been interviewed by the FBI in the first place, only to have U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan refuse the request and appoint a former judge to argue against the federal government's position. A Pennsylvania state court issued an injunction blocking any potential further certification of election results in the state pending a hearing to be held on Friday, the case being separate from the federal lawsuit by President Trump's campaign. Stocks closing mixed on Wall Street. The markets will be closed Thursday for Thanksgiving and open for half a day on Friday. The Dow lost 173 points. The NASDAQ gained 57. This is SRN News.
You're listening to a best of broadcast of MoneyWise Live. This program is pre-recorded, so please hold your questions, or you can email us at questions@moneywiselive.org. St. Augustine, Florida, and we welcome Robert.
Robert, we're delighted to have you on MoneyWise Live. How can we help, sir?
Hey, so my question is in regards to my wife and I purchased our first home about 17 years ago. And since then, we've purchased another home, but we hung on to that first one, and we have some renters in there now, and they're paying off the mortgage for it. But my question is, you know, should I – we have about $60,000 in equity. Should we sell the house now and invest that money, or would it be wiser to wait, you know, let the mortgage be paid off in about 13 years and – the home value is roughly $200,000.
Yeah. Well, I like real estate as another asset class in your portfolio, so long as it is paying for itself. It's not putting a strain on your financial situation otherwise. It's not preventing you from, let's say, investing in a company-sponsored retirement plan or a Roth IRA, things like that, and that it's not adding a lot of stress and taking a lot of time away from other valuable things like your family and so forth as you're serving in the role of landlord. So let's talk about a few of those things. Have you had good history with the renters, and have you been able to keep it rented for the most part?
Yes, yeah, we've been able to keep it rented pretty much 100% of the time, and we've had, you know, we've been successful with, you know, having good tenants, thankfully.
Yeah.
You know, I know it'll be different if we experience a bad one, but thankfully we've had some great tenants, and, you know, they pay on time and all those things.
Very good. And you're covering your debt service, plus you're able to put a little away for maintenance and upkeep?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I'm prepared to replace anything from up to the AC to the roof, you know, and
great.
Those things. So I have a reserve fund.
Good for you. Let's talk about the rest of your financial life. Do you have an emergency fund, and are you saving for retirement?
We do, and I also, yes, I've been contributing to my company-sponsored 401k since at least the last 15 years. So.
Okay, and you think you're putting away somewhere between 10 and 15% a year?
I'm roughly about 8% now, and what I've been doing recently is, you know, every time I get an increase in salary, I just, you know, that money is dedicated just for increasing that 401k percentages.
Okay. Talk to me about the amount of time you're putting into serving as landlord and, you know, calls in the middle of the night and, you know, making sure you take care of the property and respond to the needs of the tenant. Is that putting a stress on you or your family?
It's not. I mean, the only time I would say, obviously, is the time when we've got to, you know, relist it or something like that. But other than that, no, generally it's a, you know, a minor amount of upkeep or maintenance that's drawing my time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you've got good equity in it. And as long as you've got savings, as long as you've got margin in your financial life, it's not causing you a lot of stress. I think you could go either direction. I kind of like the idea of you keeping this asset class. It really allows you to follow the principle we see in Ecclesiastes 11, where you're diversified, because not only are you investing for the long term in the stock market with a properly diversified portfolio in a tax-advantaged environment, not only are you monitoring your spending and you have an emergency fund, you're building equity by way of somebody else's rent in this other asset class, namely real estate. And once that's paid off, that's going to be an asset that will continue to appreciate, or even better, could throw off an income while you're waiting. So I don't have any reason why you would want to get out of it unless you just felt like you wanted to be debt-free and therefore you could pay off the note. Or it was creating hardship of some kind, both financially or time-wise. But I'm not hearing any of that. So I'd say either stick with it, or if you felt like you wanted to get out of debt completely, that would be the reason to sell. Okay, Robert?
Yes, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. Appreciate your wisdom, too.
All right. Lord bless you, sir.
Thanks, Robert. Let's go to Hershey, Pennsylvania. Everyone wants to go to Hershey, Pennsylvania. Matthew, nice to have you there, sir. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. I have a question about tithing. I, too, have a rental property, and I have about $95,000 to pay it off. Okay. And so our question is that if I stay the course, I'm going to pay the rental property off, and ending up paying about $35,000 in interest,
yeah,
you know, with the mortgage. But if I apply our current tithe to the mortgage payment, what would happen is I'd pay it off in about 2.5 years, and I'd end up saving $30,000 by doing that. So here's my question. Can I pay off my mortgage with tithe money, and then when the mortgage is paid off, go back and make up the tithe payments?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Here's my approach to this, Matthew. I mean, whenever it comes to giving, I think it's a matter that you need to take up with the Lord directly, you and your spouse in prayer. My approach is I don't ever want to presume upon the future in anything, but certainly in this area of giving. You know, Proverbs 27 tells us, don't boast about tomorrow, for you don't know what a day may bring forth. And so I think the bigger opportunity here is obedience to what God has called you to, both in Scripture, in affirming the idea of being generous, holding everything we have loosely, and taking what God gives us, a portion of it, and putting it to work in the kingdom, which is going to yield a far greater return. When you look at the Scriptures, it's actually a 10,000% return in the kingdom for all of eternity when you think about God's economy. And, you know, that against what you're doing on paper, with which there's nothing wrong with that, but I think I'd rather see you not presume upon the future and continue to be generous and honor God's biblical principles around how we handle our finances, which means you still prioritize the things you're prioritizing, that is getting out of debt, making sure you're really tracking your income and expenses. Now, if you felt like the Lord was leading you to place a higher priority on getting out of debt, I would look for other areas in your life to cut back on. I certainly wouldn't look at the area of giving first. So that's just my approach. I don't like the idea of the IOU in the collection plate, so to speak. I'd rather you stay, keep your focus and priority on giving and out of obedience now, and let's find other ways to honor these other principles that you're keying off of, which are good, but not to forsake the giving side.
I understand that. Do you have a moment for a parallel question?
It's of really course. Quick. Yeah.
You know, some financial advisors will say, do all your charitable giving in 1 year,
yeah,
and you could itemize that year, and then the next year you do the standard deduction on your taxes.
Right.
I guess it's the similar situation where if you saved up all your tithing for 1 year, you're pretty much presuming that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the difference there, and it's a strategy called bunching, which allows you to get up above that standard deduction. The idea would be that if you were normally giving a certain amount every month and you had the assets
in another account and you want to go ahead and put it in a donor advised fund and then just continue to disperse it at the same interval and get a tax advantage from that, why not? And I would agree with that. But that's not saying that we're going to stop our giving. I would see that as an opportunity to do that on the front end as opposed to the back end.
And we're glad that you called today, Matt. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful remainder of your day. If you're just tuning in, this is MoneyWise Live. Find us on the web at moneywiselive.org. But today we're not live, so if you hear that phone number, please don't call, but do stick around. Lots of good information ahead.
Money and life run on the same track, but unfortunately, sometimes it seems like your money is heading in a different direction from your goals. In Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, author Ron Blue helps you to break down all your financial options to a basic four, and then shows you how to keep it all chugging along in the right direction on the same track. Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hi, I'm Barry McGuire. I'm here to help you understand how urgent and how fun it is to share your faith at every opportunity through the eyes of a layman. Before COVID, 80% of our population was living outside the influence of the church. And over 80% of the unchurched knew the world was out of control, was hoping there's a God who could stop the chaos, and were looking for somebody to tell them about him. That was pre-COVID. Now our churches are closed and everyone knows that our country is out of control. The good news is there are 30 million of us who know the Lord as our friend and Savior. The bad news is that less than 1% are intentionally sharing our faith on a continual basis. That's why we're in this mess. We've turned our lights out and allowed America to become a post-Christian nation. That's on us, and God's going to hold us accountable. But you still have time to make up for lost time, and we'll hold your hand. There is nothing more exciting than knowing God is using you to move people closer to Him. Join us at IgniteAmerica.com.
When kids are young, parents spend a chunk of time correcting behaviors. You know, don't touch the stove or share your toys. But as that kid grows up, the communication style needs to grow up as well. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. If your kids are now 13, 14, or even older, and you're still correcting them like you used to, something has to change. Mom and Dad, it's time to move from constant correction to encouraging independent thought. Demanding statements will no longer deliver healthy results. Instead, your goal should be to train your kids to think for themselves, to act with discernment, and to navigate through a crazy world. As your interaction style grows, you might be surprised that your relationship with your teen will grow as well.
Want to hear Mark in person? For a list of upcoming events, go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
Do you know if you have enough? Enough money? Enough house? Do you know how much is enough? If not, Ron Blue can help with his book, Master Your Money, a step-by-step plan for experiencing financial contentment. Learn how to save, invest, and give wisely, how to create a long-term financial plan, and how to get out of debt. You'll find it all in Master Your Money by Ron Blue. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hey, thanks for joining us on this midweek edition of MoneyWise Live. Ralph, I'm still thinking about that call we had earlier from Hershey, Pennsylvania. I've never been to Hershey. You ever been to Hershey?
Oh, I have, Steve. So get this. Really? It actually smells like chocolate when you're walking around the streets of Hershey, Pennsylvania.
I've heard that. And the street lights
are Hershey's Kisses.
Wow. Isn't it,
oh,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think the collective cholesterol numbers are? Of the residents of Hershey.
Oh, you're going to get some phone calls now.
I know it. Don't. I'm just jesting.
It's a beautiful place. I will say that.
I would love to visit because Lancaster is close by. That whole area of Pennsylvania is just gorgeous, beautiful, especially in the summer months and the fall. Fort Lauderdale, Tamise, we know you have been online for a while. We apologize for that, but what's your question?
It's okay. Yes, I am out of debt for the most part, except for my student loan.
Cool.
And my home. Right now, I started working mostly part-time. I've worked for non-for-profits for about 7 years now. And I actually worked in total, I would say, about 5 years for church. And I work part-time because I'm putting the rest of my time into my son. I'm a new mother. So my question is, I have heard that there are programs out there, like a loan forgiveness program. Like once you are on the program for X amount of time, income-based repayment program for X amount of time, they'll forgive the rest of the loan. Yes. However, it seems like it seems to be a moving target. Like sometimes I call them and they say one thing, and then the next 2 years later, the whole rules have changed.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out exactly how does this program work, because I'm trying to figure out if I should concentrate all. And again, I work part time and I work for a church. So my funds are very, very limited. I'm trying to decide if I should concentrate the remainder of my funds to pay off for the student loan, which is a quite hefty loan that I have left, or if I should concentrate some of my money towards the loan and the rest towards starting my son's college fund. So I don't know what direction to move, but definitely this loan forgiveness seems like a moving target.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, there's a number of requirements, and many borrowers are denied because they don't meet the program's requirements. You have to have the right type of loan. You have to work full time for a qualifying employer. You know, you have to make 10 years worth of on-time payments. But you're right. If you can meet it, then the public service loan forgiveness would be what you're talking about, where you make 10 years worth of payments and then the rest is forgiven. And the whole idea of this federal program is to encourage students to enter what are seen as relatively low-paying careers in government work or in nonprofit work. And that's where you get the tax-free forgiveness. But again, it's really important that you understand the provisions of the public service loan forgiveness to make sure you would in fact qualify. And one of those is, again, as I said, you have to work full-time for a not-for-profit, a 501c3. I do a little bit of homework. And by the way they define full-time is 30 hours a week or more. Or if you work part-time for two qualifying employers with at least 30 hours a week between the two, you may be eligible. So I would take a look at that. But beyond that, to me, so I'm delighted to hear that you've prioritized getting out of debt. You're prioritizing really putting a solid financial foundation under you. And I would be thinking about saving for your son's college, assuming you've got your emergency fund and no credit cards, and you're saving 10 to 15% for retirement, because you know, there are ways to pay for college even without borrowing. There is no way to pay for retirement apart from saving. So I would put that first. But it's worth, given the work you're doing, looking into the public service loan forgiveness, because it hasn't gone away. I think the thing that trips most people up is they don't read the fine print, and they don't realize until they're well into it, thinking they're going to get it, that they don't actually qualify. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much. I definitely needed to hear that 30 hours plus or more. Thank you.
Rob, do we have a website?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a number of them out there. You could Google public service loan forgiveness, but studentdebtrelief.us would be a great place to go. Studentdebtrelief.us. And then there's a host of other websites out there.
All right, Tamise.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you.
How old is that little guy, Tamise? We heard him in the background.
He's 18 months.
You telling me the FCC says you can't be on the air until you're 2 years old. So I fear we broke a federal regulation, which will make which means you'll no longer apply for these student debt benefits. But such is life, you know. Tamise, God bless you. Thanks for calling. Do you think people realize when I'm joking around?
I hope so, but I fear they don't sometimes.
I thought you were joking around.
Never a dull moment with you,
Steve.
When
you told me you're hired, I thought you were joking around.
Some days I wonder if I was joking.
Let's stay in Fort Lauderdale. Carlos, what's on your mind today? What are you thinking? How can we help?
How are you, gentlemen?
Good. Great.
I have a quick question. I'm 42. I'm married. between me and my spouse, we have about $45,000 on a Fidelity managed account.
Yeah.
We've had it for about 2 years. We've gained roughly about 10% out of it on that amount of time. Okay. Now, in cash, we've been saving to buy a second property as an investment, but we've seen the prices going very high here in South Florida as far as a duplex or condos. In liquidity, we have roughly about $120,000 in cash. So my question is, since real estate is fairly expensive now, should we put that funds towards a mortgage or keep funding the managed Fidelity?
Yeah.
Or just doing any investment through a financial advisor.
Sure. Carlos, are you self-employed or do you have an employer?
I have an employer.
Okay. And do you participate in a company-sponsored plan?
Yes, I do. And I'm funding 100% 401k, so pretty much $19,000 per year.
Okay, great. And what percent of that is that of your overall income? Do you know?
The overall income, it's about 21%.
Great. Wow, you're doing a great job. Congratulations. And you guys have saved a ton of money on the side for this real estate purchase. I am aware of South Florida real estate, that it is very high, one of the strongest markets in the country. And so I think the thing there is just make sure you go in with your eyes wide open, in the sense that not only would you be perhaps taking on some debt as a part of this, but you would have to get in the business of being a landlord, and just make sure you have the time for that, the expertise of that. If you didn't want to do that because either the real estate's just too high or you don't want to take that on, I like the idea of you connecting with a financial professional to help you manage this money. Obviously, you've got good cash flow. You've kept your lifestyle in check. So go to moneywiselive.org, connect with a certified Kingdom advisor there in Fort Lauderdale. There's a number of them, and that'll be a great help to you.
And Rob, let's try to squeeze one more quick one in. Darwin's calling from Missouri, and we have about 90 seconds. What's on your mind, Darwin?
Yes, thank you. I have a rental house that we sold, and we had rented it for about 7 years and depreciated it the whole time. Now we've had it sold. Before I sold, I put about $27,000 into the roof and to the updated electrical. How can I claim that on my income tax, get the most benefit out of it? Do I guess the depreciation or as an expense, or what do you suggest?
Yeah, Darwin, I am not a CPA, and so I would check with your tax preparer just to be sure. Normally, what you would do is you would net the improvements to the real property, not repairs, but the improvements against the cost basis of the house. So, for example, a pool would be an improvement. A paint job would not. And then you take that, and that's going to determine the capital gain on that investment property. The difference is here, though, you've been depreciating it, so that's going to come into play there. There would be more nuances on that than I would be comfortable getting into here in just this minute that we have together. So what I would say is there may be a real opportunity for you to do that. And so if you don't have someone do your taxes, it might be good to pay someone for their time just to give you advice on this specific situation, or perhaps just have a tax preparer do this year, even if you're comfortable doing it yourself in other years.
Darwin, thanks very much. We wish you the best with that situation there. Rob, I liked your word picture earlier about the rain and the umbrella. And what was it you were describing again?
Well, yeah, I think one of the ways to think about a retirement account like an IRA or an annuity is that the umbrella is the IRA or the annuity, which shelters the rain, which is the taxes, from the assets that are underneath. So the assets are able to grow under the umbrella without being impacted by the tax. And that's why we use those types of vehicles to grow wealth, because it doesn't put a drag on the returns. When we're not paying taxes along the way on dividends and interest and appreciation, our money's able to grow freely without the taxes holding it back. That's the real benefit and the power of using these retirement vehicles.
I like that. The rain and the umbrella. Tomorrow we'll come back and talk about the rabbit and the and the tortoise. Or
oh,
work
yeah.
up something
yeah,
for
that's
us.
Another
okay,
one.
Rob?
Yeah, I'm okay. ready for that one.
All right. The tortoise would be the way my mutual funds tend to grow, something along those lines. But we'll talk some more about that. Hey, let me mention a book to you. It's called Your Money Counts. It's by our good friend Howard Dayton. This book will help you find direction for your spending, your saving, giving, investing, getting out of debt, how to teach your children about finances and money, and much, much more. You'll find this book and other helpful financial resources when you visit our website. Scroll to the bottom of the page, moneywiselive.org. You'll also find links to Rob's resources, how to contact a financial budget coach, how to find a certified Kingdom advisor in your area, and much more. It's moneywiselive.org. And don't forget, if you have a brief email for Rob, just a couple of lines, send it along. We try to get to one or two on a daily basis. The address is questions@moneywise.org. Questions@moneywise.org.
MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media. Thanks so much for being there. Join us again next time.